B-Pod Studios.
Mr. Zach Berman joins us. What's going on, Zach? Good morning.
Hey, good morning. Thanks for having me on.
Absolutely, man. Good to have you on, as always. So Jim Schwartz offered his explanation yesterday. You were one of the people asking questions of the Eagles defensive coordinator. First off, what was your reaction when you saw, maybe it was a replay, maybe it was initially when it was happening, Nate Gary on Chase Claypool?
Yeah, so, I mean, it's obviously not the matchup you want. And, I mean, that's pretty clear from the jump. Now, you knew that they were in a zone, obviously, because the tight end on the top of the screen, you know, they had their corner, Craig James, on him. So I understood the explanation that Jim Schwartz gave in the sense that they had a defense there that they wanted. Then Ben Roethlisberger adjusted. That being said, I don't think that's an excuse. Whether it's playing that better, whether it's calling a timeout, whether it's making an adjustment yourself, I don't think it can be rationalized away by saying that's a good quarterback making a play. That is true and that is valid, and there are times when the other team makes a play, but you're talking about a third and eight in a two-point game, and that iced the game right there. So, you know, you do give credit to the Steelers, but I don't think that can be an excuse for what happened.
So I was blown away later in the press conference, and I must have missed it because I was still blinded by rage. He did answer the question about a timeout and said that's usually up to the head coach. We had Avante Maddox on with us yesterday who told us anybody can call a timeout. Why wasn't there a timeout?
Well, that's a good question.
Do you believe what Doug said, that it was, you know, there, first off, do you believe what Jim said, that it's up to the head coach, and do you believe what the head coach said, and that he didn't want to burn it in that instance?
I do believe that. You know, before the play, you're not expecting Claypool to run right by you. But clearly, like, you know, as you go back and watch it, you see Roby Coleman instructing Nate Gary to add more depth there. Why didn't they call a timeout? Obviously, they should have if you knew it would result in a touchdown. I think that in that moment, a lot's going on. They probably thought they could get by. That's not a good answer. It's not a good excuse. But my guess is that's what happened. They didn't want to burn a timeout because they would need one.
Is that the case where Jim Schwartz doesn't call timeouts?
Well, it does come from Doug on the sideline, but they do call timeouts when, you know, if they have 10 men on the field, for instance. Mm-hmm. That's a situation where Schwartz might tell them to call a timeout. You can call it. So it's not like out of the realm of possibility for someone besides Doug to want to call a timeout there, but that usually does fall on the head coach. Yeah.
Yeah, that's what I thought. Now, the other thing that's been just awful in this, really the entire defensive production this entire season so far, and even go back to last year, is misdirection. And that's what you asked Jim Schwartz about yesterday, and how many times that has caught them off guard. He said since the Rams game, it hasn't been as much, but man, in this Steelers game, it seemed to rear its ugly head again.
Well, yeah, I mean, I really don't buy that, because I think the Steelers ran the ball five times with a running back in this game. I'm sorry, with a wide receiver in this game. And that was an outlier when you look at the rest of their season. Half of their wide receiver runs came in this game. And Schwartz said they did a good job on them outside of the 58-yard run. Well, you can't take away the 58-yard run, number one. You know, I mean, those plays are designed to get big plays. And the other thing, too, is they scored a touchdown on a run too. So you saw the Rams do it. You obviously saw the Steelers do it. And I think this is going to be something that teams are going to continue to do for a few reasons. First off, it's well known that the Eagles have aggressive defensive ends. You know, they have a penetrating defensive line. So you want to get out on the perimeter. I think it's well known that they don't have great linebackers. And then you obviously want to get your skill guys against the cornerbacks or the safeties in tackling situations. So the fact that the most runs in the NFL by wide receivers have come against the Eagles, the most yards by wide receivers on the ground have come against the Eagles, and the most touchdowns have come against the Eagles, that's not a coincidence. I think that's based on what teams are seeing, and I think you'll continue to see it unless the Eagles stop it.
Zach, my question to you is overall pictures is how I want you to look at this. And I've given, if you want to grade out anything, I've given Doug Peterson an F- as far as talking to the media and trying to explain what's going on. Doug Peterson yesterday saying that the coach has to call a timeout, and his explanation of things kind of had me off kilter a little bit. Then you have the pointing fingers at Howie Roseman. They make the decisions, and I'm doing this and that. My question is, overall in this organization, is this a bump in the road, or is there a crack in the foundation?
As far as the season, you mean?
As far as the overall picture of what is happening right now, moving forward with all of this.
I don't think it's a bump in the road. Now, a crack in the foundation, I would say it's somewhere in between there. When you're 1-3-1, I think it's indicative of personnel issues. Now you can say coaching issues and roster building issues. I think that all plays a part in it here. I think that the Eagles probably looked at last season and the season before, 2 years when they finished 9-7 and had to kind of gut to it, and maybe those seasons obscured reality when they looked at their roster and they looked at their team building and they looked at their coaching. But 1-3-1, I think that says something. And there are holes on this team. And now there's obviously a lot of season left to be played. But if the Eagles make the playoffs in a bad NFC East, it would be a major mistake for this team to look at making the playoffs and obscure those other issues. So I do think there are some cracks in the foundation. I don't think they're the New York Jets right now, but I do think there are some issues that must be resolved.
You mentioned the Jets, obviously Le'Veon Bell becoming available. Would you advise the Eagles to go after him? Do you think there's any chance they try to add some more depth in their running back core?
I would never say never with the Eagles, especially when it comes to offensive talent, because of the situation they're in. I don't know if this is kind of the best situation for Bell, because I know the Eagles are committed to Miles Sanders as the featured back. The difference here with some other situations, when you're talking about a trade or you're talking about just a normal free agent, is I don't know if price is going to be the issue here, obviously, because the Jets are on the hook for a lot of money there.
Yeah.
So if it just comes down to the situation, or if it just comes down to interest, it would behoove the Eagles to at least consider something. But I don't think Bell would find the role here that he might be accustomed to.
And I agree with that. I would still love for the Eagles to, at least as I've been saying, just test the waters a little bit. Now, the other thing here with the linebacking situation, stop me if you heard this before, the Eagles don't value that position very much. At what point do you think, we talked about, Bob mentioned cracking the foundation. I know there's a huge crack in a pillar in their defense, and that's at the linebacking position with Nate Gary. Is he on thin ice at all? Are they entertaining the idea of getting Sean Bradley in there more? What do you think the situation is there at linebacker?
I mean, if your only other option is your sixth round pick, that's a problem.
Right. I agree.
Yeah. I don't think Nate Gary would be going from the number one linebacker who plays every snap to being benched. You know, if they were to kind of scale it back, I think it would be more of an evolution. That being said, this is an organizational decision that they've made. You know, if you want to say put your money in the defensive line, that's fine. I agree with that. And then put your money in the number one cornerback. And if you want to trust your scouting and development staff at linebacker, I understand that. But they have shown no indication over the past few years that they can scout and develop that position. So if you're going to rely on the draft and you're going to rely on player development, I just haven't seen enough evidence for that. So I think linebacker's a problem. I thought linebacker was a problem going into the season. And I don't think Nate Gary is a bad player, but I think Nate Gary is better in the role that he was in last year, say, than as your number one every down linebacker.
Zach, is it possible that Travis Fulgham has infused some confidence in Carson Wentz that'll carry him through to playing better, not just with Fulgham, but with other players on this team?
That's a good question. Certainly it could be that way. I just think having a wide receiver who goes up and makes plays on the ball is going to make Carson Wentz better. Carson Wentz made throws in that game to Travis Fulgham that he wasn't making to other players. And right. I think that comes from confidence, that comes from trust. It was interesting talking to Jalen Mills yesterday when he was talking about Fulgham, and he said the thing that stood out about Fulgham when they in training camp, when they first claimed him off waivers, was that Fulgham would go up and high point the ball. All right. So he wasn't just waiting for the ball to come into his hands. He would go up and get it. And you saw that time and time again. The best way I can explain it is Travis Fulgham is playing the way the Eagles wanted J.J. Arcega-Whiteside to play. So if Fulgham can continue this, I do think it helps Wentz and it helps the rest of the receiving core because they can all kind of work their way around that.
Speaking with Zach Berman from The Athletic, are any concerns put aside now with Carson Wentz now that he seems to at least have a target and has played progressively better over the last 3 weeks?
Well, he's better than the concerns that were there maybe week one, week two, those aren't there. But I don't think Carson Wentz is playing like top of the league football yet, and that's what they need him to do. So there are still throws out there and plays out there that he must improve on. But I think what you're seeing is that when the wide receivers can help him a little more, or a wide receiver can help him a little more, it makes Carson that much better. I think concerns are alleviated, but I don't think they're totally eliminated.
Zach, a couple more for you here. There's been a report out there about how much power Howie Roseman has, and we kicked it around a little bit in the 8 o'clock hour here. And the question was, who really runs this team? When it comes to the most clout, the most say, is it Howie? Is it Lori, the owner? Is it Doug Peterson? Who wields the most power inside the NovaCare complex?
Well, as far as the roster, as far as the players that you see out there, I would say Howie. I mean, Jeffrey Lurie obviously wields the most power, you know, because they all report to him, and he's the one who determines their job. But as far as who you see on the field on Sundays, yeah, I think it's fair to say that's Howie. He has control over the 53. He has influence in a lot of different facets in the organization. So I certainly think it's fair to say if you're talking about the players who are on the team, Howie Roseman's responsible.
How about game day stuff, Zach? Who dresses? Who doesn't? All that stuff. We know this has been written about and it's come to a head recently. But how do you think that dynamic works out on game day?
Yeah, I think Howie has influence, but I think ultimately, you know, the coaches know who's going to play, and they're going to determine that. And a lot of that obviously has to do with injuries and with numbers, you know, and there's always ambiguity during the week in terms of can this guy get to Sunday in terms of the injury. But I think Doug and the coaching staff, in terms of the 47 on game day, or 48 on game day, that's what they're involved in.
All right. Zach Berman, The Athletic, last thing for you. Ravens come to town, reigning MVP Lamar Jackson. The Eagles have a chance here. What's happening?
it would be a stretch to think the Eagles are going to win this game. I think the Ravens are a better team. It's a tough matchup for the Eagles. You know, you never say never. They did go into San Francisco and win, although you saw San Francisco last week against the Dolphins. But if you were, 7-point underdogs at home, I think that speaks to the quality of the team you're playing. So I obviously give the Ravens the edge here, but ultimately this season is going to come down to what the Eagles do in the following three games. Giants, Cowboys, Giants. If the Eagles do well in those games, we'll be talking about the chance of postseason football. If they don't do well in those games, we'll be talking about the draft.
All right. Zach Berman, The Athletic, always great catching up with you, my friend. We'll talk to you again soon.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. It's going to be a busy year for country superstar Jason Aldean. He's extended his Highway Desperado tour and is teaming up with Kid Rock for Rock the Country tour dates. We've ranked our top 5 Jason Aldean music videos. Text Jason to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Jason to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.